One of the difficulties of the section of the Torah we read this morning is trying to figure out not what the generation of Noah did wrong, although that has its own intricacies and mysteries, but figuring out what the Tower of Babel people did wrong. After all, they built. That's really all they did. It was a little bit of biblical urban renewal. They didn't punish anyone, at least not in the biblical text itself. They weren't, as far as we can tell, cruel. They just decided, as human beings have for a long time, that they would create this ambitious structure that would fix them permanently in the memory of humanity. And for some reason, God takes offense, decides Lebilbil, you can hear the root of Babel, to mess up their languages, to cause them not to understand one another, to ruin their plans for the tower and to scatter them all over the world so that, it seems, people will never think of cooperating again. It doesn't seem like a very biblical message. You would think God would look down and say, finally, after all the discord of the time of Noah, people are getting along with each other. They're building something together. It's like when your kids who've been squabbling in one room all of a sudden decide that they're going to build something in the next room. What parent comes in and says, no, I don't like that structure. I'm going to knock it down, stop understanding each other, and go to different rooms. It doesn't make any sense. And that's why the commentators have rushed in to explain what the Tower of Babel people were doing wrong. And of course, as always happens when the commentators seek to explain what they were doing wrong, there is no agreement on this. One says that the tower was built like a lightning rod. This is Rabbeinu Bachya. That is, it was supposed to keep away whatever kinds of disturbance created the flood in the first place. And you'll remember when Ben Franklin first proposed the lightning rod, good religious people were against it because lightning was sent by God as a punishment, and how dare Ben Franklin confound God's designs. Rabbi Yonatan Eibeschutz, a later rabbi, somewhat after the medieval period, says that it was actually a weapons outpost. They thought if they stationed somebody at the top there of the tower, nobody could attack them. Rashi quotes a beautiful midrash. It says that the purpose of the tower was to hold up the heavens because they were afraid that God would start another flood, and they didn't want the sky to fall in on them again. So it was really a product of fear. There are lots of other explanations too, but a lot of them center around what Sforno, a later commentator from about 250, 300 years ago, wrote very beautifully and very poignantly. He said the sin of the Tower of Babel was that everyone participated. It was a totalitarian government. Everybody had to cooperate in the building. And God doesn't like that. So God, and this is now obviously not how Sforno put it, but how we would put it, God looked down on the world and struck them with diversity. Because remember what had happened to the people previously. It was chaos. The generation of Noah knew no order, no center, no regular rhythm of the world. Instead, there was this giant flood that burst all the bounds of nature. And as a result, what happens when people are struck by chaos? What do they seek? They seek order. And they were desperate for everybody to do the same thing so that there wouldn't be chaos the way there was in previous generations. When someone grows up in a home where there is chaos, what do they try to create in their own home? order. They want everything to be right and everything to be okay because they can't stand the encroachment of chaos anymore. It's too dangerous. And you can understand why those who had in their historical memory what happened to Noah want everything to be just right and to be just so. This is, as you may know, a very common historical explanation for what exploded in Germany in the Second World War. The rampant inflation, the societal chaos, and what did the German people want? They wanted order. They wanted someone who would stand up and say, this is the way everything must be from now on, so they would be safe. It explains, at least in some historians' estimation, the reason why the one European country, the one Western European country that you would have expected to put up a greater fight against the Nazis was the French. But they were still so reeling from the millions who had died in World War I, so afraid of chaos that they were willing to accept order even if the order was imposed from outside. Chaos is that scary. Order is that safe. And so, if Sforno is right, the sin of the Tower of Babel is the great sin of the 20th century, which is the deep desire of human beings to give up their freedom, their difference, their diversity, their pluralism, if only someone will tell them exactly what to do. And that's what the creators of the Tower did. And that's why God destroyed it. Every system of government has to make this calculation between order and chaos. And it happens all the time. This is why, even though people use the phrase imposing democracy, you can't impose democracy. Because democracy depends precisely on the choices of the governed. You can impose a dictatorship, but you can't impose on people their own choice. You can give them the possibility of democracy, but if they don't grab it with two hands, they won't have it. This is not only something that we know nationally and biblically, but even, and this comes to us unsurprisingly from the 20th century, psychologically. In 1939, there was an experiment conducted on leadership styles by a social psychologist named Kurt Lewin, in which he divided up people into different groups, and he designated leaders, and he fed them the style of leadership. And unsurprisingly, the autocratic style, the style that insisted on conformity, created passivity and sometimes a little hostility in the people that were ruled. And the most successful style, the style where people were happy and where they joined in, was the consensus style, what we would call the input style, where everybody had a chance to offer their own views. The reason that Kurt Lewin devised this experiment was that he was born in Posen in 1890. It was Prussia when he was born, but later on was Poland. And he was a professor at the University of Berlin before he fled in 1933 when Hitler was elected chancellor. And he knew, as a Jew who had lived in an incoming totalitarian regime, what this meant. And I like to think that as a boy in Cheder in Posen, he probably learned it right here from the Tower of Babel, from the story of Noah. And even though this seems the opposite of what people take from the biblical message, it is in fact at the heart of the biblical message. That you need to be who you are, but you can be glad and grateful that others are not you. That, to put it as Oscar Wilde put it, in his particularly pointed way, selfishness is not living as one wishes to live. Selfishness is asking others to live as one lives. That may be why, of all the major monotheistic religions, Judaism is the only one that doesn't ask the rest of the world to be Jewish. Why is that? Because the lesson of the Tower of Babel is alive inside of us, which is that we claim the right to live as we want, but we do not insist that it is everyone else's obligation to live as we do. We don't ask non-Jews to separate their meat and dairy dishes. Why? Because you don't have to do it just because I do it. Because the idea that God made different lands, different languages, diversity, pluralism, as the Midrash puts it, a king stamps a coin and every face looks exactly alike, but God stamps the coins of every individual face and they're all different. It's at the very beginning of the Bible. Before there is a Jewish people, God creates the possibility of there being a Jewish people by making lots of different kinds of people. You can be proud of who you are, study and practice who you are, but everybody doesn't have to be you. I remember reading not so long ago the beautiful illustration of this that has to do with the founding of our, not even of our country, but of our continent. Jared Diamond, professor at UCLA and author of several best-selling books, once pointed out the difference between Western European culture and Oriental culture in the Middle Ages. Remember that many discoveries that we think of as scientific discoveries, gunpowder, paper, other things, were invented in China. But, he said, China had one disadvantage, which is illustrated by the case of Christopher Columbus. When Columbus decided he wanted to find a new route for trade, he went first to the government of Portugal. And you know what they told him? You're crazy. We're not funding this. Now, said Diamond, had Columbus been born in China, he would have gone to the emperor, and the emperor would have said no, and that would have been the end of it. But you see, Western Europe had lots of countries, and lots of rich families, and different lands, and different languages, and diversity. So Columbus went to Ferdinand and Isabella, who financed, by the way, only half of his expedition. The other half was financed by private families, because Columbus, like every successful pioneer, was a fundraiser. And he went around to different families and he got money because he could do that. There was no Tower of Babel. There was no single centralized place. And eventually, he got the funding and he left. In other words, without pluralism, no America. Without diversity, no discovery. This is something important from this story that we have to teach the world in an age where there are increasing drives to totalitarianism, where we didn't learn, amazingly enough, the lesson from the totalitarianisms of the 20th century. God doesn't want a single voice. That's not how we were created. It is not how we are intended to be. This nation, as well as our tradition, has that important lesson to teach the world. We were founded by a triumph of diversity because there were lots of places for a lone explorer to go to try to find somebody who would finance his vision. And that is, sometimes more successfully and sometimes less successfully, what it is that we try to show the world, that no single structure can encompass the totality of human aspiration, that we are all different, we should be all different, and that our difference is God's blessing. Shabbat Shalom.